We have a lot of videos of the podcast and various other tutorials on YouTube. You can subscribe to our channel at mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. Happy mixing and enjoy the show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One, two, three.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me, as always, we have Lou, the Solution, Moreno.
Jeez,
very nice.
What is the solution?
I don't know the how to make a Jersey Shore callback though. Like,
coolie hoo.
I don't know. I don't know.
You want to do that one more time?
No, we can keep that.
And then today we have a very, very special guest, our good friend, master of the mixing engineers, Bob.
Not the master of mixing, the master of mixing engineers.
The master of mixing engineers.
Why can't he be the master of mixing engineers? Nobody told you he couldn't be.
I was trying not to confuse mastering engineers. So mastering mixer works too.
All right.
Bob. Everybody give a round of applause.
Everybody give him a nice horn announcement. Yes.
I prefer golf claps, you know.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Would you like some snaps?
No.
We can just do like a one clap. It's like half a celebration.
How about a cheers?
Here you go. And shout out to Bob's assistant, Shaq, for the Topo Chico.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers the twist to grapefruit.
I'm being a rebel.
Yes.
Let me explain this dent. Really see this dent here? This is the patented Bob Horn thumb grip that I've done for about a decade now, and I've never dropped a canned beverage, since I've been doing this.
Yo, when I'm drinking, I'm going to do that.
That's a secret. That's one of the secrets. You shouldn't have shared that. No.
Yo, he's plotted against us with the help of Shaq. He gave us something we couldn't put a bend in. He's expecting us to drop it. I see you, Shaq.
Oh, this is good. This is good. Well, this is going to be a fun episode. One, because I found out recently, well, relatively recently, that Bob actually has a really goofy side and that we love that about him. And we're always goofy, so this is going to be a good episode. So we're going to ask some kind of questions. We're going to ask questions to Bob, and hopefully Bob can answer them and kind of give some insight.
Or not.
And kind of like... from your perspective, from your experience, kind of what you kind of expect, or what you've kind of seen, what you've learned. You have a lot of experience, a specific experience within the
podcast. Is this the question, or is this...
No, this is me, a long, long intro to this. You have a lot of very specific experience within the pop mixing realm that I think everybody would like to kind of tap into. So we're going to try to suck some information out of your brain. Okay. Of all the information that you gathered. But the first thing is, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your journey, because you've been mostly in the box and hybrid. Your journey going from analog domain out of necessity into choosing to go more hybrid and digital. What was that like?
Well, yeah, so I got out of school in like 98, and then it's kind of professionally engineering in the industry by like 2001 or 2000, somewhere in there. And yeah, consoles were still a big thing, especially Nashville. The migration to Pro Tools was kind of slower than California. I don't know about other places, but Nashville, everyone was still reel-to-reel tapes, whether it was digital or analog, and then, you know, Atari Radar, like weird formats like that, and occasionally analog, and definitely desk, you know, Neves, SSLs, all that stuff. So, and in the school, of course, we had that, so I learned all the SSLs and Neves and all those boards, and then assisted on them, and then worked on them for a while. And then I'd say once I got out here and I was working in like R&B, hip hop, stuff like that, probably that lasted like the big studios with the big boards, probably till like 2007. And then at the same time, the industry was kind of changing. Everyone started that was calling me. They used to call me and say, "Hey, where do you like to mix?" And I started getting the call, "Do you have your own setup?" And I think that was budget related because, you know, the economy kind of suffered 2007, 2008, the housing market, all that kind of stuff. And I think budgets were lower. So they were asking, "Do you have your own spot you can mix?" And I had to keep saying no. So they would then ask me like, "Well, what are your places you like to mix?" And then I would have three different budgets of places, you know, like Pacifique or Record Plant or this, whatever, you know. Mm. So I had different ranges of SSL rooms, you know, to fit their budget. Mm. But I kind of saw the need to have my own studio. And I got my first Pro Tools rig that wasn't basically an HD rig. I had like the Digio 2 back when they were called DigiDesign and all that before Avid. And then I got my own like big boy Pro Tools rig in 07. And I also got my first room. So I was leasing a room where we put an SSL and we just, the guy that helped me do it, it was his building and we combined gear and we just made this mega room, mix and tracking room with the SSL. And I worked there for like 3 years and occasionally I was still going to other studios, but not much. Once I had my own room, like everyone would come there and work with me. And that was very hybrid. So lots of in the box, lots of plug-in, but also splitting everything out to the SSL, lots of outboard gear. Recalls would take an hour and a half. Yep. And that was the big problem was people started to work in the fashion where they don't come to the studio and hang out for 12 hours. You print the mix at the end of the night. And then if you want to come back to it, you got to pay $1,500 for a recall for the studio. And then you have to pay an engineer's fee and all that stuff. They wanted to get away from that. So I would send them the mix sometimes by email. They wouldn't even show up.
Yeah.
And then like 3 days later, they'd be like, "Okay, turn the snare down." And it's like, okay, I have to plug in the patch bay, all this outboard gear, set all the knobs on the mixing board, set all the outboard gear. And to do that accurately, you have to like video everything. And I'm talking to myself on the video to have mental notes and calling out the patches. And it was taking like an hour and a half to pull up a song. So I would pull up a song, make the adjustment, send it. And now I have to get back to what I was working on that day, which was a new mix. Or I'd have two people ask me to do changes. Mm-hmm. So two recalls while doing a new mix. So it was messing up the schedule. So I thought of different ways, talked to different guys. Some guys were doing stems, and then any recall would be off the stems. And I didn't really like that because you lose control over adjusting a vocal or, you know, you have to basically work on top of that once you make stems. And I was doing a Usher album, or like five songs of an Usher album. And the last song was like acoustic guitar, percussion, some vocals, not much else. And I just decided to do it in the box. All the rest of the four songs were on the board with outboard gear. I did it in the box, except I think I had a vocal chain, like compressor, EQ, de-esser. And I actually liked it better than all the other songs, mix-wise.
Nice.
So once that was over, I had to go back to a country album, and I'd mixed half of the album. So I had to mix the other half, and I decided, because it was, I mean, this might be bad, but because it was a independent artist that was not well known, this would probably be her first unknown album, and then if she's had success, you know, she would get bigger later. That's usually how it goes. So I decided to do the second half in the box and kind of take that risk, and if I fell on my face, I would just, you know, on the second song, go back to normal. Yeah. But I did it in the box, and I liked that better than the first five songs. Even after mastering and done, it had more of the things I had in my head.
Was it like a workflow thing at that point?
Well, not only that, but
was
also
like less noise floor sonically, and all that?
Yeah. All kinds of stuff. Okay. But also, and this is the funny thing, because people say analog is wider and deeper and more defined and everything, and I had the opposite experience. And I could have been my console, whatever, my thought process, the conversion, who knows. but I actually liked it better. So the coming weeks after that, I would always A-B. I would mix a song in the box, and then after I got a good rhythm section going, I would start splitting it out on the SSL, pushing all the faders up, and it's like, I lost something. So now I would hold option, put everything back to one and two, hit play, and it's like, ah, oh, that's better. And I was like, maybe there was something else that I wasn't taking the time to make sure, but I felt like I had to start digging in on the analog EQs to get it back.
Yeah.
So I went in the box, and the SSL became a volume knob for the last my last couple of years at that studio. And then when I came over here, we sold the SSL, and we made this place just an in-the-box place with the outboard gear for preamps and tracking and stuff. And I mixed completely in the box for many years. And last couple of years, I've started to go hybrid. And there's some analog pieces that I just found have great character. Mm-hmm. And I've now added a summing mixer in the last, like, month. And
shout out to Rupert Neve.
Yeah, Rupert Neve, cool, the one. New summing mixer, the Orbit.
Yeah.
And I kind of found, you know, some of the things people say, like the separation, the width, the detail, and the ability to kind of push an analog circuit harder and before you clip the digital, you know. Yeah. So there's some benefits that I'm kind of rediscovering, and I don't know if it's, you know, your taste and your ear changes over time. And
maybe it's the concept of, you know, how they say with time gives perception. Maybe at the moment, in the box, coming from an SSL, because that's also a big thing I've always said, like, consoles are great, but there's also a lot of variables involved. Like,
yeah.
We don't know what it is, but sometimes you do a recall, and the next day the power isn't actually running the same.
Yeah.
Because of that, this console just doesn't sound the same.
Exactly.
It can literally just be electrical difference from one day to the next.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more consumption going on throughout the rest of the building.
Could be.
So maybe that actually gave you the consistency, but now that you're, like, listening to it with fresh ears again, you know, after so long, like, now maybe it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
So I have another question for you here. So just to, also to put it into perspective, I should have said this much earlier, but Bob has worked with many, many artists, many names. You said Usher. I know you've worked a little bit with Akon, BTS, one of my favorite, Neo, Lupe Fiasco, a bunch of big names. BTS being like a more recent one and that you've got great recognition for.
I think you recently worked on some pretty cool records that people will be hearing soon, too.
Mm.
So if you guys keep up on what he's been working on, you'll see some pretty cool artists coming up.
Yeah, and we're at Bob's studio right now, the Echo Bar Studios right now in Los Angeles. And, so can you... I would like to learn more about how you've seen music culture change, especially as technologies change. What have you seen as far as, like, mixes, like, culturally, like, right now... Like, when Stevie Wonder was mixing, the hi-hats were really loud, you know? But how have you seen culture change in different genres coming up to this point? What is the state of 2021?
So we're talking from a mixing aspect?
From a mixing aspect.
Mixing aspect. Man, I don't know. There's guys that set trends and producers that set trends that mix engineers kind of follow. And... I don't know, as far as things like that, like hi-hat level, I think that was personal taste of Stevie thinking the hi-hat is important to the groove, and then maybe other people follow it just because they don't know why they follow it, or they don't know if that's the reason because of the groove, but they just know Stevie Wonder did it, so let's push that up. You know, it's like, what was it, 2017, The Weeknd, I don't remember when his first album was, actually probably before that, but... you know, lots of reverb on the vocals. And then it seems like everyone starts following that trend.
Post Malone,
it's like,
did it.
You need to have lots of reverb on your vocals.
Man, the Tory Lanez reverb.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, now we're doing that. And then another artist does something that's popular, and so we follow those trends. And I think that's kind of always been a thing. And that's, I know you guys as engineers, you get clients that come in, and they're like, oh, can we do such and such like so-and-so? Like they want... You know, they want that side stick from the Rihanna song. You know, they want that Ariana Grande delay that's on something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people follow, which is nothing wrong with. You kind of stay current and you do, you know, you just do popular things and that works for your music because you're trying to have the same audience. And there's other people that are kind of forward thinking and they try to imagine what things will be like in 6 months or a year, and there's other people that do the opposite. Like Dave Pensado always does the opposite. So if delays are not popular, he's going to use delays. If reverb is really popular, he's going to go dry. You know, it's like there's people like that. And there's other people that just do what they like to hear and they don't know why they're doing it. They don't put much thought into, well, this is the trend or so-and-so is doing this. They just say, I like this. I'm going to do this. And then if they become popular, they set a trend without even trying to, you know.
Mm. So. I think, honestly, that's more along the line that I subscribe to. Because I've told DK in the past, like, I don't listen to radio much. I think a lot of people in our industry don't, because usually what's on the radio?
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right? A lot of times what's on radio is something that either us or our colleagues have worked on already maybe a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, depending on release dates. Nowadays, like, music's getting released much faster.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if we're talking about trying to set a new trend or something or trying to stand out, following anybody's already made equation will either help you fit in a little bit easier or can just drown you in the process.
Yeah, I feel like when artists especially follow other artists like to the T, it's a big mistake. It's because you're not yourself anymore. You know, like I've had artists, I have had groups that they want me to compare our mix to something else, and it's like there's no rhyme or reason other than that guy's successful, that artist is successful.
Yeah.
Let's make it sound like that, because then that part of the equation is done. And I get that, but as far as at least the mix and the sonic aspect of the record and them as an artist, there's no uniqueness to it. Yeah. You know? So that's why you get, you know, when people say, oh, everything on the radio sounds the same nowadays.
Yeah.
That would be why, you know, like same beats, same, you know, and even using the same guys, same producer, same mixers, like try someone new, you know?
Yeah.
So we do have a large group, a very diverse audience that listens to us. But I think this is a very basic question, but I'm sure you get asked this a lot. So you've given this a lot of thought. From a beginner's perspective, what is some advice that you have for those trying to do more with music? Trying to do more with music.
Oh.
Whether they're engineers or producers, what's kind of like your, some advice for the beginners?
Just trying to do more? Just.
Yeah, like kind of take music more seriously. Kind of like level up their skills.
Practice, man. I mean, practice is everything. It's like, I think there's a big disconnect between today's producers, engineers that are trying to learn their skills and musicians that are trying to learn their skills. When you want to play guitar, the only way you're going to get better is by practicing. And a lot of people think they can watch a video or a tutorial or, you know, something like that, or find out some plugin, and then that'll be like a check mark. Like they're good now. All that, they do that every time, they're fine. But a guitar player, you know, they have to play over and over again. You know, when they're learning a song, they got to play it over and over again. And that's just the way it is. And that's the way mixing is. That's the way production is. You know, if you ask anyone who's been doing it for a while, whether they like their mixing now or 10 years ago, or they like their production now or 5 years ago, it's always, the answer is always going to be now. It's like, you don't really go backwards with more practice.
Yeah.
You know, so I think practice is the key. It's like, and kind of vet your sources where you learn stuff. So, like, make sure you're learning from good people, good places, whether it's websites or YouTube channels. Make sure the people know what they're doing. And that doesn't mean that they have the biggest credits in the world. You know, it's like there's as far as mixing, there's mixing tutorial sites where every guy has a huge name, but they're not good teachers.
Yeah.
So it's like, just because somebody does their craft well for themselves doesn't mean they're going to be able to teach it to you.
Yeah.
And that can go with, I mean, I had guitar teachers as a kid that were horrible, you know, but they could jam like crazy, but to teach me, they didn't have the skill to convey what I needed to know and mold me into a better guitar player.
Yeah.
The same thing goes with making beats, everything. It's like practice and listen to good quality people. And you can figure that out by, let's just take YouTube. If the comments are good, there's a lot of subscribers, you don't have a lot of naysayers that are saying the opposite, you know, you can pretty much guess that they know what they're talking about, you know. Yeah.
That's really interesting because this is one of the pretty common things that I hear and read in a lot of like success books, success-oriented books, is the importance of learning from those that have or are doing what you want. There was some crazy statistic that I read. It was something like almost 90% of any seminar about how to achieve your dreams, the person giving the seminar had not achieved that dream themselves. So it's like a ridiculous amount. And most of the people that have made it, they hire ghostwriters to write the books for them. So it's like figuring out who you're learning from and learning from the source directly, as well as knowing what you want. These are all very important things. For example, like if I was an artist, maybe I wouldn't hang out with the mix engineer because I'm not trying to be a mix engineer, you know, on a regular basis or try to get as a mentor. Maybe I should hang out with another artist or an artist manager, right? And maybe you're right. Maybe not about the credits. Like maybe not someone that has been vetted with great credits, although that can help. But more importantly, like the teachability thing, like being able to teach well, I think that's huge. That's amazing. So what about from an advanced level? Like what's the secret sauce? What are kind of people forgetting? What do you see common mistakes at an advanced higher level?
Advanced level, I think mistakes.
Or just any sort of advice.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the deeper you get into it, the better you have to be with people. And the more, relationships become super important. And I learned that late. And I think that was a detriment to myself, you know.
So how do you mean by that? Do you want to expand a little bit on this?
So having a good attitude in the studio, I'll tell you about myself. So whenever I was really focused on engineering and the sound, and of course, the earlier I was in my career, the more it was all about the kick drum sound and the snare drum sound, and the EQ has to be perfect, and what mic am I using, instead of about the music. And when you hear like the guys on top say, you know, I just listen to the music, it's all about the music, and there, and you want them as someone that's learning, as a student, you want them to say, oh well, on every acoustic guitar you need to dip 1.2k, whatever, you know, that's not a thing. It's like, it's about the song. And the reason they say that, it's not a cop-out answer, it's, I think it's because when you're learning, you want it to be technical so you know what to do, so you can have a formula. And then later, when you've learned it yourself and realize there is no perfect formula most of the time, then you learn that it's about the music. And dealing with people, like I used to, when I was super focused, I would walk around like this, you know, or be in the studio working like this. Like I was had this thing in my eyebrow, like I looked angry, and nobody wanted to mess with me. Nobody, everyone wanted to, hey, Bob, is it okay if I, you know? It's like, yeah, and I would snap out of it, you know. But it's like that, someone had to tell me that on the side. Like, hey, this artist thinks that you're angry all the time, or this or that. And then I'd go, wow, I really need to, like, look at myself.
It's, and you, like, were just focusing.
I was just focused, you know. But it's like being able to hold a conversation in the studio, being able to be cool, being able to be likable. Not that you want everyone to like you. You always want to be fair to yourself and stand up for yourself in business and everything. But you don't want to be a bump on the log that's just trying to get through the session, and you don't care if the vibe's right in the studio. You don't care how they feel about performing their music, you know. And I know there's a bunch of engineers that get put off by people that are trying to be too vibey, and they're not wrapping their head around that. If everything's comfortable for the artist, they will perform the best. The song will be the best. The song will probably do the best that it could possibly do, minus marketing money and all that stuff. Maybe they don't have that kind of thing. But it has the best chance if the performance is right, and the performance will be right if the vibe has the best chance of being correct. So someone brings in a bunch of candles, or they like to smoke weed in the studio or in the booth, and the engineer's like, oh, no, I don't want you to do that. It's like, yes and no. There's we don't allow smoking in our studio. Let's just take that example. We don't allow candles in our studio, two of the things I mentioned. But you got to understand why that makes them comfortable and try to adjust for that. Try to, if you can't let them put candles in the studio for insurance reasons or accidents, then try to help them out some other way. Is there lighting like that you can put up? Is there, make sure the air is right, make sure they have a comfortable place to sit and write their song, you know? It's like thinking about that stuff, which is the boring part. It's, it doesn't have to do with plugins and settings and this preset from this famous producer. You know, it's the stuff that makes them more comfortable so they can deliver better.
Absolutely, know? Absolutely. This is something that we say constantly on the show, is that after a certain point, I think I've said this too, like, it doesn't matter how good my mixes are. What matters and what most people care about is that I'm a damn good hang. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To a certain degree. Like, I can stay focused. I can get focused. And I'm not smoking and drinking with the artist. Mm-hmm. But I know how to... I'm like their best hype man.
But
and
you're,
I'm sitting in the chair.
You're not making them feel like if they ask you to change something that they're bothering you. Like, interrupting you.
No, absolutely not. You know, yeah. It's. I think it's like if you can come out of the room making sure that they feel like the engineer, is on their team... You're on their team.
Yeah.
If you can get them to feel that, then I feel like that is what's going to make them feel like you're a good engineer.
And they'll probably be back. Probably
yeah, absolutely, back, absolutely. You know? It's so funny. It's one of the cheat codes, I feel like, to succeeding. I've noticed this more and more and more. So when you said that, I was just like, oh, yes, please. This is amazing. This is amazing. Lou, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Well, I'm a big believer in... You know me. I'm a guy all about my standards, but my standards are solely based around customer experience. It's all about how I make people feel from the moment they walk through the door, the moment they see something. How do they feel? How does it welcome them? The feng shui of the studio. Right when they walk into our studio, they see the couch. They see that it's clean. The Nintendo Switch is there. Something's always on the screen available for them to play. But you also know me. I'm also a stickler audio engineer. But the one thing that we've had comments before in the past that I'm very proud to say is even the clients that I've complained to myself a million times over leave reviews saying that he's never once complained when I asked for a revision, for a change. He's always been so welcoming. I always feel at peace. I always feel like I'm the priority, even though I know he has bigger accolade clients. I always feel like he's got me in the forefront. And that's what I'm always after for my clients. And ultimately speaking, no matter what piece of gear I have, no matter what microphone I use to record them, nothing will ever matter more than that.
That's amazing. So I want to take a quick pause right here before we continue and give a huge shout out to our sponsors. So first off, thank you so much to iZotope for sponsoring the show.
Oh, yeah.
If you are interested... And get Bob, I'm not going to lie to you. I have to ask you, do you use iZotope plugins?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. Do you know anybody that doesn't use iZotope? I'm just kidding. But
my
for
mom,
real, iZotope
but she doesn't
is
engineer.
Amazing. Oh, yeah. You're always using the Exciter plugin from Ozone Suite.
Yeah.
And we were talking about tonal balance control and Insight.
We were talking about Insight earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, honestly, iZotope is amazing. If you want 10% off any of their products, go to iZotope.com/MMPodcast and use the code MMPod10 to get 10% off, excluding Spire and monthly subscription.
Shaq, write that down.
That's right. That's
Shaq,
right.
Save us some money.
So also thank you to File Pass. If you're interested in File Pass, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/links. And you can sign up for File Pass. It is a file transferring service. It's really awesome. Set of
I've
paywalls.
Actually shown that to people like Aviator Keys and DJ Ice, you know, people that work with like Boz and Gunna and Young Thug and all them. And each time one of them sees them, I'm like, hey, look, you can actually, even as a producer, not just as an engineer, but as a producer, if you wanted to do non-exclusive beats where they could just pay to download them and all that kind of stuff, yo, File Pass is actually kind of like the low-key secret. And you actually, one thing, I don't know if we've brought it up, you can set up portfolios in it.
That's
so
right.
So as an engineer, you can actually send out mix portfolios with lossless playback.
There you go. So check out, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/links and click on the sponsors link and you'll find everything for File Pass as well as for iZotope and all of our other sponsors. Yeah, so on that note, we're going to, I mean, keep going. We could, I mean, we have Loudon to thank as well. Thank you, Loudon, for the microphones.
Thank you.
If you're interested in getting a Loudon mic, you can DM me or Lou on Instagram at DKMixes at Midside Sound. If you want lots of love and attention and maybe some good advice if you're lucky, Bob, are you on Instagram? You're on Instagram at Bob Horn Mixing.
Yep.
There you go. Bob's also on Clubhouse a lot.
I am. Yeah.
What kind of stuff do you see on Clubhouse?
Clubhouse is reckless and wild. It's the wilder west right now. It's
as beneficial as it is poisonous.
Yeah, and it's definitely a time waster, but good. Like, I've learned so many cheat codes, verifications, and I'll come back to that. And met good people and new friends from Clubhouse. So, cheat codes I've learned about, plugins I didn't know about, settings of plugins that I had that I didn't know about, just discovered new things, verifications, just verifying that I was doing something like other people do.
It's that you're not crazy.
Yeah, like hearing like how
does
somebody...
Does anybody just bypass a plugin and think it sounds better?
Right. But, I mean, just take... All right, so printing your mix, like how people bounce their mixes, what versions they give to people, like just hearing somebody talk about that, like, oh, well, I include this, 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 and this, and I bounce it this way. It's like, oh, yeah, that's how I've done it for years. I guess I'm not a dummy, you know? And then people, like I've met a bunch of people in person now from Clubhouse and people from out of town that have flown in to work on something, and we meet up for lunch or something. So it's a great networking thing. I think I've gotten a handful of mixes, like gigs off of Clubhouse.
Really? That's cool.
But you know, so the Clubhouse thing, it's all about connecting to Instagram. So if you follow someone, you're listening to them in a room, you can't DM them or anything. And you're like, oh, I want to hire that guy to produce my next beat. So you can go to their Instagram and DM them there, find out more about them, listen to other stuff they've done if they have it on their Instagram. So Clubhouse is great. And it's and it has lots of categories of rooms other than just music. But you know, I go there for the music stuff.
You know, sometimes I get into the chat where like they're like, "Who wants to get flued out?" And you know, I put my hand up, but I never get flued out.
Flown out.
Flued.
Flued out.
Specifically typed out the word flued. Yeah, I don't know how that became a thing, but I'm just flying with it, you know. And I'm trying to get flued out. Whatever that means.
So what's, I don't know, what's a, this is now it's got me curious, what's like the craziest, most radical advice you've received? I've, on Clubhouse.
Oh.
Because like, for me, because like, there's one that I got, there's like, oh, like, I reference Pink Noise for my reference track.
I might have, was I in there that day when
probably,
that was,
like, that's something that I hear I every that. Once in a while. Like, I watch my meters and make sure that the real-time analyzer is looking exactly the same
so
as
let,
Pink
let's
Noise.
Stop right so let's let you continue but let's stop right there and just state to the world that there's not a number that you should put something at on a meter all the time. That's ridiculous because if you're working on the same genre all the time and your bass drum is always at the same level, maybe, but you're not going to always put your snare at -5 peak or something like that. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it doesn't work like that. Okay, go on.
No, that's all I was going to say. Lou, what were you going to say? What was the funniest one you said?
So we were in a room and it was for like advice from the top to the bottom, you know, for engineers.
Oh no.
Yeah. So,
from the top to the bottom, this is already a good room name. This is not good. Go ahead.
Yeah. But no, it was fairly interesting because I was like one of the first moderators in it, and somebody got into the group like we're like an hour into conversation, and everybody's giving good advice like be conscious that revision counts scare people away, unlimited revisions just implies that you're confident in what you're doing, blah blah blah, you know, and everybody's giving solid advice. Then this one guy comes in. I forget what his name was, but I'm really glad I just don't know the guy because this was really messed up.
Wild. This is wild.
Yeah. Somebody asked the question of, you know, as a tracking engineer, I want to become a mixing engineer. What's the number one advice you can give for me to be able to get hired as a mixing engineer for more of the records that I'm recording? I originally told him, speak up. And do as good of a job as you can, like with the rough mix, so that they can be further impressed when they take it to somebody else. And it sounds worse when they touch your rough mix. This guy chimed in and he's like, no, you don't even have to do the rough mix. In fact, this is what I do. I swear to you, I do this every time. Just bypass all the plugins except for AutoTune and bounce that with an L1. That way, when you turn the plugins back on, there's your mix. And you charge them for that. And I was like, that is so fucked up. You mean to tell me that you got people paying?
It's like actually
paying?
Kind of genius, but also really unethical.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, this sounds amazing. Then you bounce it, like secretly bypassing everything. Oh. And then you hand them that. They get in their car. This sounds like shit. Yeah, you got to pay for the mix. Uh-huh. You paid me to record it, really not mix it.
That's, I wonder.
I really hope nobody listens. Yes, they do. And I'm really sad to say they do. And they kind of have a following. And I'm not going to say
I'm
kind
of torn on that. I'm kind of torn on that. Depending on who it is.
Yeah, I get the logic. Like, if you paid me to repair your car, I'm not going to give it a full detail and polish the whole thing. I came to fix your engine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But a big thing about being able to showcase yourself as a new upcoming recording engineer is showing that you really know what your ears are hearing, right? If you have a lot of rough mixes that have tons of resonance going on, it's really muddy, vocals are too quiet or too loud, like that's just indicative of what you're hearing on the spot for something new. It doesn't build a lot of confidence for a good mix. But if your rough mix walking out of the studio goes to a mixing engineer and that mixing engineer does a worse job than your rough mix, they're probably going to come back and be like, hey, can you just give it more of a mix? Like, how much would you charge us for that? Because now they're looking at you as like, yo, the mix engineer can't even match.
So this actually might turn into a really good question. One of the most common questions that I think we all receive is how do we get more clients? Like, that is just, like, one of the most common questions and one of the hardest to answer as well. Bob, I'm going to throw this to you. What do you think? when you get that question, what is your answer?
So that's – I don't feel like I'm an expert at that because I always – well, I always want different clients. Not to say I don't like the clients I have, but I might see, like, music or a group or an artist that I want to mix for, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could work with them. It's like, how do I get that? And it's like, other than just cold calling. So cold calling and reaching out cold has never worked for me. That always backfires. And I've always, so the way I've always gotten gigs is recommendation, word of mouth. And rarely because somebody heard something, found out that I did it, and then reached out cold to me.
I think that's pretty common, is word of mouth once you're kind of sustained. Because you're definitely not in need of any new clients, and you have enough people out there that know you and trust you enough to recommend you, and you have a constant flow of incoming clients. But like, for someone that doesn't have as many clients, well, kind of like, what would you
say? I mean, I still do what I'm about to advise that people that are looking for clients do, and that's be, first of all, just in the background, get your skill up. Like, get your, you know, always strive to do better. It's like everything we work on, we want it to be the best, and figure out what that is and how to do it. And it's a lifelong pursuit, I believe. You know, I like what I did this week better than last week, you know. It's so the skill, especially when you get to a certain level, the skill is expected. It's like, it's expected that you are good. It's like, how's everything else? Like, how are you as a person, all that. But make yourself seen. And it's easiest to do that now. Before, we only had word of mouth and album credits. Now credits have kind of suffered. That's harder, but we have social media to kind of fill in a little bit of that gap. And we didn't have that back then. So it's like people discovered us either by hearing about us word of mouth or by seeing the credit or I guess magazine interview or something. But now you could do a lot more and reach a lot more people faster with Instagram or Facebook or whatever social media. So being out there, having your face out there, your name out there, your work out there is important. And
creating content.
Yeah, content, you know, and that's a thing. And sometimes it's going to feel like you're white noise in this sea of people, and you are, but if you have something, you got to gain followers. And if you have something enticing or you appeal to people, it'll work for you, and you'll cut through that white noise. Yeah,
absolutely. Even just this podcast, I feel like it's very small in the sense that we only do it once a week, release it once a week. I've just been doing it consistently for coming up on 2 years now, and It's been the most beneficial thing ever.
And you promised that I would get 10 clients from this one podcast.
Yeah, so you better.
I'm going to hold you to that.
DK making promises that he's about to complete on his own. He's like, I will book you 10 times.
I think this is a really good place to stop for this episode. Thank you so much, Bob. If people are interested in working with you, what is your way of people hitting you up? Do you have a website?
I do have a website.
So
I have a website that has both a contact that'll reach myself or my manager. And then Instagram, I get that a lot. And email, my email is bobhornmixing@gmail.com.
Bobhornmixing@gmail.com.
But I can be found.
Instagram. What's your website name?
Findable. Bobhornmixing.com.
Bobhornmixing.com.
Everything is that. No, that's the other thing.
You said you can be found, but was it because of Liam Neeson? Did he find you?
He didn't find me.
I mean, he has a particular set of skills.
He does. He does.
So on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
One, two, three.
The Mixing Music Podcast is proud to say that we have a lot of free resources outside of the actual podcast. Visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/links to find access to our free PDFs and free resources.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.